The Chinese government outlines new economic targets in its most important political gathering of the year. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Well, let's take you to Beijing, where Chinese Premier Li Keqiang opened the annual meeting of parliament today. In his address to the National People's Congress, which largely rubber stamps official decisions, Mr. Li outlined a set of fresh economic targets. They're aimed at continuing to lift the world's second largest economy out of the pandemic-fueled crisis.
As a general target, China's growth rate has been set at over 6% for this year. In setting this target, we have taken into account the recovery of economic activity. It will enable all of us to devote full energy to promoting reform, innovation, and high-quality development.
Hitting that target would mark a return to strong growth for China this year. It was the only major economy to expand in 2020, notching growth of 2.3%, but it was the weakest pace in decades. What's more, the government's expectation for this year falls well below the International Monetary Fund's estimate of 8.1% growth. The BBC's Robin Brandt explains one possible reason for that.
This is on the low side. Look, I think it makes it easily achievable, and China likes to hit its official targets. It always does that, remember. And there is some kind of talk that maybe they are pricing in a return of COVID, possibly, or some other unforeseen circumstances like that.
Now, it wasn't just economic growth targets, but the premier also outlined other goals, including job creation, a decrease in energy consumption, and higher defense spending.
Yeah, and I think those environmental measures were probably the most significant for China, but also, of course, for the rest of the world. You know, China, the world's second biggest economy, still a key driver of global growth. It has long been a very important policy area for Xi Jinping. It's driven by a domestic need. China has terrible problems with pollution in the air. Strategically, though, it also wants to make progress in terms of things like electric vehicles, because it wants to be less reliant on foreign oil as well. So we saw new targets in terms of CO2 emissions and also in terms of energy consumption. They also came in at the kind of rather low end, still allowing for about a 1% year-on-year growth.
Despite that optimism from the leadership, the finance ministry, in a report it released at the start of this meeting, said it had some concerns about the budget. Is that kind of contradiction unusual?
Well, no, I mean, there's still an ongoing issue here about how China deals with the massive increased borrowing as a percentage of its GDP that it put in place to try and stabilize the economy and then to try and stimulate further growth in the wake of COVID. I mean, the China debt story is a huge issue anyway. There are also ongoing concerns in credit risk for China's burgeoning consumers. I mean, we saw the government intervening at the last minute to postpone, actually more likely cancel, what would have been the world's biggest IPO for Ant Financial just a couple of months ago. That was about growing concern about systemic risk and these companies, frankly, becoming all too powerful. So these issues are very much in play, and there is an ongoing debate about the stimulus and when and how it will taper off.
The BBC's Robin Brandt for us. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, expectations for rising U.S. interest rates are continuing to rattle markets a bit. Benchmarks in London, Paris, and Frankfurt are down as much as 0.8% this morning. Meanwhile, the Bank of England has set an end date for the London Interbank Offered Rate, or LIBOR. That's the scandal-tinted interest rate that acts as a baseline for trillions of dollars of global assets. It'll be replaced by central bank-compiled rates instead. Australia has responded today to Italy's decision to block a shipment of 250,000 Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said losing one shipment would not badly affect its mass vaccination program, but the nation's health minister told reporters he's asked the European Commission to review Italy's actions. The BBC's Phil Mercer has more from Sydney.
Officials in Canberra say Italy's ban won't affect the pace of a nationwide vaccination rollout. But there are fears it could be the start of the hoarding of drugs. Australia has one key weapon against so-called vaccine nationalism. Domestic production of the AstraZeneca jab is soon expected to deliver 1 million doses each week. Rome has justified blocking the delivery, saying Australia, which has recorded a total of 29,000 COVID-19 cases, was considered not vulnerable at this point in the coronavirus pandemic. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Phil Mercer for Marketplace.
President Joe Biden has vowed to find tens of billions of dollars in funding to supercharge the nation's chip-making industry. It comes as the world faces a shortfall of semiconductors used in personal electronics and electric vehicles. While America has asked for help from Taiwan, home to some of the world's biggest chipmakers, companies there are taking a hard look at what the move means for their businesses. The BBC's Cindy Su has more from Taipei.
They really have very little choice because the U.S. is their biggest customer. So companies like TSMC have already committed, even under President Trump, to building a $12 billion plant, a foundry, to make chips in Arizona. These companies are also concerned about the higher cost of production in the U.S. And that's one of the reasons why U.S. companies had contracted out the production to overseas, especially Asia, like Taiwan and South Korea over the years. The U.S. is also in recent days talking to the Taiwanese government to try to get Taiwanese companies to help make up for the shortage of automotive chips. Now, that's the kind of chips that Taiwanese companies actually don't really make much of.
Taiwanese companies, though, as you say, they're not well positioned for the auto market. Should they pivot? Are they considering pivoting? And what kind of challenges would that present for some of these companies?
The industry experts tell me that this is not something that could be done within a few days. It might take several months, maybe into the third quarter of this year, before the demand for automotive chips can be filled.
Now, another challenge for some of these Taiwanese companies operating there is something that's completely unavoidable, and that's the weather. And it's an annual problem for these manufacturers, isn't it?
Yes, it's an annual problem. It's right before the seasonal rainy period. But it's become a much bigger problem in the past couple of years because there have been very few typhoons. In fact, last year, Taiwan didn't even have one typhoon hit the island. Taiwan's reservoirs really need this massive amount of rain during typhoons to fill up. And right now we're hearing that some of the reservoirs are at historic lows in terms of water levels. And some of them are like 10%, 12%, 15% full. So companies like TSMC and other semiconductor companies are having to buy, you know, truckloads of water from private companies that have stored water over time. And so TSMC, you know, just to give you a sense of how much water they need for making chips, they need 156,000 tons of water per day. And they actually reuse more than 85% of their water. But still, that's not enough. So the government and the industry itself are trying to get the companies to reduce the use of water and recycle more of their water. This is going to be, you know, very challenging until we get more rain. And, you know, it's been pretty dry skies lately.
Let's hope for some more rain for those manufacturers then. The BBC's Cindy Su in Taipei. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
On the subject of smarter cars, Volkswagen said today it expects autonomous driving to be widely available by 2030. It also sees sales of pure electric cars by that time to make up 70% of European sales and half of U.S. Chinese sales. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.